We are in beautiful Santa Barbara on April 17th, Santa Barbara, California, interviewing Joseph Oros, O-R-O-S, who is known almost universally to his friends and colleagues as Joe. Joe is a key figure in automotive design history and certainly a very key figure in Ford automotive design history. Mr. Oros has contributed a manuscript to our collection. We are in Santa Barbara today to talk with him about various events in his career, which he felt were key episodes in both his professional development and his design history career. And we will be asking Mr. Oros about interesting and important episodes in Ford design history, such as the 49 Ford, the Mustang, and others. Mr. Oros, as head of the Ford studio for many years, was instrumental in guiding Ford design history into many key decisions, design decisions, which illuminate automotive design history. We will ask Mr. Oros to begin at the beginning to illustrate and to illuminate areas of his personal and professional life which he felt impacted on design history. If we could ask you, Mr. Oros, to start with the earliest influences that you can recall of which guided you toward a career in industrial design. The interview with Mr. Oros today is another in our series of oral interviews with seminal figures in automotive design history, sponsored by the Edison Institute's Center for the Study of the History of Industrial and Automotive Design.
Thank you, Dave. Is it on?
Yes.
Thanks, Dave. Well, some of my earliest influences, Dave, I will have to go back to the influences of my early childhood years. And the influences for me were developing in Detroit. And my earliest guidance in Detroit was, first of all, I was always interested in drawing and painting and the art. But I joined a community center in Detroit, which was the Franklin Street Settlement on Franklin Street in Detroit. And in this settlement, there was a man that headed the carving section for the people that were interested in carving. And Sidney S. Kopp was the man in charge of this group. Sidney, I believe, S. Kopp, K-O-P-P. And he was a graduate of Yale University in sculpture. At the time, he was the chief restorer for the Museum of Art in Detroit. And one of the benefactors and chief supporters of Franklin Street Settlement was Mrs. Edsel B. Ford. And little did I realize that someday I would be associated with Ford Motor. But Sidney Kopp gave me special instruction in drawing, charcoal drawing from still life. And he gave me all kinds of information relative to drawing and rendering. He then got me interested in wood carving. And soon I was wood carving with the men. I was the only young person there, and I believe I was about 13 years old, and the rest of the people were much older than I. They were old men in their early 30s, late 20s, and on up. And we were doing this carving. But Sidney was one of my first influences. And naturally, in school, I was constantly drawing. And the teachers in school finally decided that they ought to try to get me into Cass Technical High School at before my time. So I was double promoted from my intermediate school, which was Miller Intermediate School, which had a fine record for athletes, and some of the world athletes graduated from Miller. Tolan.
Eddie Tolan.
Eddie Tolan, I believe.
Who went track star.
Track star went there. And my art teacher and the counselor for the school, Mr. Kaufman, had me double promoted from the 8th grade to the 10th grade at Cass Tech.
Already a tough school to get into.
It was a very difficult school to get into because you had to have certain qualifications to get into Cass Tech at the time, both scholastically and a special aptitude in either science, architecture, music, or the arts. And I was accepted at Cass Tech as a 10th grader from after finishing my 8th grade. I was pleased to be admitted, needless to say, and at Cass Tech I had one of my basic foundations laid in drawing and design. And I just had a marvelous time there in the art department. I became very close friends with all my teachers. I did have a difficult time, excuse me, in bypassing the 9th grade and going to Cass Tech as a 10th grader, because I had to pick up my 10th grade academics, and I had missed a full year of algebra and a full year of English, and these proved to be difficult problems for me at Cass. But I wound up as a 10th grader taking 9th grade math subjects in addition to my 10th grade subjects, and 9th grade English in addition to my 10th grade English, so I doubled up. But with my artwork, I was right at home and right in there with all of the 10th graders in all of their art capabilities. I was then asked to join the Museum of Art Saturday morning special art classes.
By invitation.
From Cass Tech, and I spent all my Saturdays, of course, then at the museum. I did not finish the Cass Tech High School because the family moved to Cleveland. I finished my high school at East Tech in Cleveland, Ohio, which again was a school very similar to Cass Tech, in respect that it concentrated in the sciences and the arts. The only difference between East Tech and Cass Tech was that the school in Cleveland was co-educational. Was all boys, And CASTEC was co-education.
So you missed that.
So I missed, of course, the co-educational part, the final schooling in high school in Cleveland. Now, after graduating from Cleveland, I received the scholarship to Cleveland Institute of Art, which was just fine because I came from a very poor family, and that helped me tremendously to get started. And while I was at East Tech, I again, by invitation, was asked to go to the Saturday morning classes to the Cleveland Institute of Art to pick up additional art training from Cleveland Institute of Art while I was still in high school at East Tech. So I was very much involved in drawing all my life. And my design career really began, not knowingly, back in Detroit as a 13-year-old, where I was so impressed with the automobiles, and I frequented all of the showrooms I could find. I was frequenting the Lincoln showroom on Jefferson, near the U.S. Royal Rubber Plant, and asked the dealers all kinds of questions about the Lincoln cars and the Zephyrs. And I also frequented the Chrysler showrooms and, of course, the showrooms of Packard and the Cord. And the dealers and the people in the showrooms were always so obliging in answering all of my questions regarding the cars. And in addition to all this, I found a small place near the water on Atwater Street in Detroit that was putting together an airplane, and I watched this plane's development almost on a daily basis, watching the draftsmen and the engineers working on this plane, and I would shinny up the window and watch the engineer working at his drafting, talking with him. And so my interest in cars and planes started from the time I was 13, not knowing that eventually I would be doing car design work myself. Now, at the Cleveland Institute, I was not quite totally geared to design when I started the Cleveland Institute, but I had strong inclinations to design. And by the end of the sophomore year, I had made up my mind that I was going to go into industrial design and major in design and minor in automotive design.
Unusual to have that available to you.
And it was available to me at Cleveland Institute, and which was one of the better schools at the time for teaching industrial design in the United States, and where I also prepared some automotive design work. And my chief design instructors at Cleveland Institute was Bates and Victor Schreckengast. And Victor Schreckengast was my mentor in design in my junior and senior years. Now, all through my years at Cleveland Institute of Art, I managed to go through my schooling with a scholarship. And it was a working scholarship and an outright scholarship. It helped me throughout my whole time at Cleveland Institute, which was a 4-year course. And after finishing the Cleveland Institute course, I was very fortunate to receive the Agnes Gund European Traveling Scholarship from Design.
G-U-N-D.
Agnes Gund, G-U-N-D, Scholarship from Design. And then I took this scholarship and went to Europe in 1939 and went to Sweden, where I studied Swedish design and influence, Scandinavian influence in design, and also spent a full month at the University of Stockholm studying design, and spent a lot of time traveling to the various firms that dealt in the products of furniture design and product design and Orrefors design and pottery design in Europe, in Sweden. The war was drawing near. I could sense it in 39, and I had to cut my trip in Europe short, so I cut my stay in Sweden short and took a fast trip all the way into Romania and back home to the States before the war was really on in full earnest, but it had started before I had reached Holland in my return trip to the States. The war had just started. Germany had invaded Poland, and I was told by the lady I was staying in the small pension that I was so fortunate to be in Holland at this time, because Holland was not going to be in the war at all, but that United States would be in the war, because historically U.S. would enter the war. So I listened to all this and left for the States shortly afterwards on the Rotterdam, and we did pick up survivors that were torpedoed by the Germans. This was a survivors from a lumber freighter, and we finally docked in New York unscathed. And it was a rough trip, and the boat was laden with a lot of people that were fleeing from Europe, and it was a rough trip. Now, in the States, the first thing I did was call my girlfriend at the time, Betty Thatcher, who was a graduate from Cleveland Institute of Art, and she was in my design class.
Fortunately,
Cleveland Institute was co-educational. It was a very fine school, and I met my future wife. I didn't realize it at the time, Betty Thatcher. And I called Elyria, Ohio, and I was told that Betty Thatcher was in Detroit working for Hudson Motor Car Company.
Her
duties at Hudson Motor were as a designer. And she was hired by Frank Spring, who was chief of design for Hudson Motor, and he wanted the woman's influence. And to my knowledge, my wife at the time, Betty Thatcher, was the first woman designer in the United States. And she worked for Frank Spring on the Hudson car. She designed the interiors for Hudson cars. This was for the 1940 car. And she designed the instrument panel for this car. And she designed several of the exterior appointments, the chrome appointments for the car. And she worked with such designers as Bob Thomas, and she worked with Cotto, Bob Cotto, and she worked with Kibbiger, who was in charge of the studio.
Do you remember how to spell his name?
Kibbiger, I believe, was K-I-B-B-A-G-E-R. I'm not positive of this. And so she had a marvelous career. But when I found out she was in Detroit and I was slated to work for Howard Ketchum in Radio City in New York, I instantly made up my mind that this was going to be a terrible problem for me commuting from New York to Detroit every weekend to visit with Betty Thatcher. So I decided at the time to give up my job in New York with Howard Ketchum and go to Detroit. Because when I had graduated from Cleveland Institute of Art, I had three openings. One was with Howard Ketchum in New York, and Howard offered me a job in his design organization of developing the industrial design portion of his office. And I had another offer with Designers for Industry in Cleveland, Ohio. And I had another third offer was with General Motors, to work for General Motors in design.
Mr. Ketchum, a well-known color and design specialist, as you...
Howard Ketchum was a well-known color specialist, and he did the color interiors, and he did the interiors for Pan Am Clippers. And he wanted to get into the industrial design business, and he came to Cleveland Institute of Art, interviewed me for the possibility of joining his staff and to develop the industrial design business for the office. And he said, now, at the time, he said he realized that I had other offers, and he said, why don't I go to Europe and think about it, and the job is there if I want it when I come back from Europe. So when I came back from Europe, I had to disappoint Howard and tell him that I was terribly sorry, that I couldn't see how I was going to work it, that I should really go to Detroit because of my relationship with Betty. And so with that, I left Howard, who was very much disappointed, but he did tell me not to consider it binding in any way, and I went to Detroit. And to my surprise, when I arrived at General Motors, I was told, yes, they'd be happy to hire me, but that I would have to join their school. At this point, I was a little bit disappointed because I had thought I'd be joining the design department. But in fact, I was joining the design school as a training for the design department. And in this schooling, we were promoted every 3 months or given our pink slips every 3 months. And of course, in the school, there were many people that made their mark in the automotive end, such people as Elwood Engel, Richard Arbib, who worked as a designer for General Motors, A-R-B-I-B, and he finally opened his own offices for industrial design in New York, and Elwood Engel, and Frank Bianchi, and
B-I-N-K-I
or Y, Bianchi, or C-H-I. And Richard Arbib, who was a marvelous designer. And of course, Eugene Bordenay, And I, of course, also attended. Jean Bardonnais was, believe, 3 or 6 months ahead of me in the rotation. And Elwood Engel and I were in the same rotation. But both Elwood and I graduated from the school and joined the design office at General Motors. And I started then, of course, after graduating from the GM school, started with the Special Development Studio that was headed by two people. It was Giulio Agramonti and Dick, forget his last name now.
Hitchcock?
No, it wasn't.
You mentioned Tom Hibbard.
Tom Hibbard.
Okay.
It was Tom Hibbard
and
Agramonti.
Right.
And shortly after joining Tom Hibbard and Agramonti, I was further evaluated for my potential and slotting in the design office at General Motors. And one day I was told to pack up all of my belongings in the studio and that I was being transferred to the Cadillac studio to work with Bill Mitchell. So my automotive career started with Bill Mitchell in the Cadillac studio. But I do have to retrace a little bit with Howard Ketchum.
Yes.
From New York.
Mm-hmm.
Howard Ketchum didn't show how furious he was that I didn't join up with him. I did mention to Howard, I said, "Howard, you did say that this would not necessarily be binding, so I'm assuming that you will accept it in good faith, and the reason I'm going to Detroit," and I told Howard that I was going to go to General Motors and to join in the design office of General Motors. But Howard wrote General Motors a letter in his anger, saying that I had thrown up his job offer in New York and that I wasn't really a fit person for General Motors to hire. And he also wrote a similar letter to Cleveland Institute of Art, saying to Cleveland Institute that their graduate threw up his design job offer that he had held open for me. And so I wasn't aware of that. But Howard O'Leary, who was the design manager,
administrative
manager for Harley Earl, came over to the school one day specifically to see me. And he said, "Joe, I want to tell you something." He said, "Harley Earl's on vacation, and I'm opening all of Harley's mail, of course, and I opened up a letter from Howard Ketchum addressed to Harley Earl. And Harley Earl said all these terrible things about you, and I kept thinking, well, this is not the Joe that we have. This is not him at all. And I want to tell you what I did with that letter. I simply crumpled it up in a ball and threw it in the wastebasket, and I said, that's not Joe at all.
Oh, how nice.
And I wanted to come over and tell you about it." And I said, "Well, Howard, I'm so pleased that you told me this. I didn't realize that Howard had done this at all." And I explained to Howard O'Leary what the arrangement was, that it wasn't really binding. And I said, "I'm so pleased that you did finally throw that away."
You never saw the letter.
I never saw the letter.
That's
but I did start in the Cadillac studio, and I moved into Cadillac all smiles from ear to ear. And Bill Mitchell.
Tell us a bit about Bill.
Bill Mitchell was a very outgoing person, a marvelous designer. And he would sit down with the designers in the studio, and he himself would design for the car. But he was such a peppy person, enthusiastic designer. And you could just feel the studio quiver with him. And he was the youngest head of a studio in the GM of all of the studio heads at General Motors at the time. But before I get started on my design career in the General Motors, I would like to backtrack a little bit, if I may, Dave. As an automotive designer, I have a very peculiar background in a sense. Nobody at General Motors knew this, or at Ford, but my family never owned an automobile. And I was always so terribly interested in cars. And also, I never owned my own automobile until after I was married. First of all, I couldn't afford it. And the family never had one. So during the time that I was in school at General Motors, when I first started school at General Motors, I had my boarding with a family in Detroit where the oldest son was doing commercial artwork, and he worked in the General Motors building. And I went to school, of course, in the same area, and he taught me how to drive for the first time when I was going to the GM School of Design. So that is a very unusual thing, to have a person not having had an automobile, yet being so terribly enveloped with the automobile.
You remember the make?
It was a Ford.
Ford what?
It was a Ford car. Uh-huh. So if I can now continue with Bill Mitchell.
Yes.
In the studio with Bill Mitchell, there were about three or four designers, and I was the youngest. And they soon found out that I had just been married 2 weeks. And all hell broke loose in the studio, and they even got me a gift. And I had a marvelous time in the studio. And Bill Mitchell, when I first came into the studio, all smiles, did bring me to reality and told me that I could stay in the Ford studio entirely if I was with the proper credentials as a designer. Well, that wiped off my smile for a second, but I couldn't help but smile continually that whole day. And I worked with Art Ross in the studio, who was a designer in the studio, one of the seasoned designers, and Victor Froelich, who was in the studio.
Froelich.
And I believe another designer by the name of Wyman, who wasn't in the studio much. He was a little ill at the time. And our chief blackboard man in the studio was Matty Shoemaker. And we called him Matty Schumer Cat. And
was it the German spelling? S-C-H-U?
Yes.
M-A-C-H-U.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And we did such crazy things as spraying his head, which was totally bald, with airbrush, and putting a tape down the center of his head just to give him a part, and he'd go from studio to studio, and believe it or not, people didn't even recognize him. But we were cutting up constantly, and of course we were very much involved with the Cadillac car and the models and the engineers that would come over from Cadillac engineering, and the body engineers to debut our products. And we were involved in the studio with developing special cars in competition with the advanced studios at General Motors. And we were actually put into teams. And I recall one time I was in a team with Bill Mitchell, and we were competing with another team that was being headed by another designer, I forget his name now, and we were asked to go up on a roof of the building to give a critique to these cars. And from one of the studios, Harley Earl had a special car developed along with a coupe, a four-door sedan and a two-door sedan developed. And I specifically remember Harley Earl saying that we should all give our critiques and not to be embarrassed and not to hold back and don't be reserved, and particularly the new designers, and to step right up and say what they have on their mind. So at this time, after reviewing the cars, I decided that I would go directly to Harley Earl with something that troubled me about the two cars and the suggestion. And the thing that bothered me was that the four-door sedan was so boxy, and it lacked the sleekness of the two-door sedan, and with its sleeker greenhouse. And I went up to Harley Earl, and I told Harley, I said, Mr. Earl, the thing, as per what you've asked us to do, what bothers me about the two cars are that the four-door sedan is so boxy. I wish it could have more of the two-door sedan flavor in its greenhouse, if that were possible, to make it a little sleeker. Well, with that, Harley Earl looked down at me, and he was a tall man, and pulled himself right up to his full height, and I believe he was at least 6'4" or 6'5", and I was only 5'11", and he looked down at me, kind of glared, and didn't say anything to me, but he called for Jules Andrade, who was the chief body designer for General Motors at the time, and he said, Jules, who is this? And he didn't even ask my name. And I recall that I was totally chagrined and nonplussed, and I thought my career had come to an end. And I saw Jules Andrade talk to Harley Earl and kind of smooth things over, and explained that I was one of the green designers that just graduated from the school, and I was in the Cadillac studio, and on and on and on. And I went by that one, by that hurdle. But in the studio, Bill Mitchell was quite put out with what had happened on the roof. And Bill Mitchell told me that that should not have happened. And Harley Earl did visit the Cadillac studio occasionally, and I specifically remember a short time after the episode on the roof, he came into the studio, and I was working on a full-size blackboard design for a Cadillac, and he was interested in what I was doing, and he was trying to make conversation with me, and I was being very cautious. And I do recall he was quite pleased with what I was doing. So, well, that's an interesting workout of that problem. And he says, I guess that there are other ways to skin the cat than just one way, isn't it, Joe? And I said, yes, Mr. Earl, I guess there are many ways to skin the cat. But I decided right then and there that I wasn't going to enter into too much conversation with Harley Earl, because I was still chafing and felt quite burned from my episode on the roof.
At this point, it might be a good time to give us your description of Mr. Earl and his techniques at General Motors. He was quite a giant, even in those.
He was a giant in those times, and my recollection of Harley Earl were awesome. Both from the standpoint of what he had accomplished. General Motors was way ahead of the car industry. General Motors started the car styling business. And it was awesome, in fact, because I knew that Harley Earl had a lot to do with the original LaSalle. That was so popular. I believe it was the 1939 LaSalle that was so popular. And it was awesome also that I realized he had such a strong influence and made such a tremendous mark in the automotive design business. And it was awesome from his size. He was a tremendously tall and powerfully built man, very outspoken, but he had a very short fuse, extremely short fuse, and he was very outspoken, and
profanely so.
And he also said things that he wished he hadn't said. And I wasn't aware, I was becoming aware of this, and in addition to all this, I was also, of course, aware of my episode with him on the roof, and I was very conscious that he had a short fuse, and I also was aware, I was told by designers that he made the trips around the studios, from studio to studio, and he could just arbitrarily let a designer go that he didn't like or he felt wasn't contributing enough, just arbitrarily let him go. And I knew of all of these things. So I admired the man, yet I was quite concerned about his personality and his short fuse. But the other thing that I was aware of about Harley Earl that happened with my tenure in a design office was that I was there, of course, when the war broke out, and the design office was informed that it was no longer going to do design work for the cars, and that the design office was ending, and that the last ones fired would be the first one, no, the last ones hired would be the first ones fired. And shortly after that, I was called and I was told and that I was would be getting my separation allowance, and they felt so sorry that this had to happen. And I did receive my separation allowance and returned to the studio. And Bill Mitchell, I know, was quite upset, And he said, this should not have happened to you at all. And he instantly got on the telephone and called the chief engineer at Cadillac Engineering and said, you know Joe Harris in our studio? And of course he knew me because he'd been in and out of the studio, and I had conversed with him, and Bill Mitchell asked me if he could do something for me in the engineering end of the business, and he said, of course, can he can draft, and he's a draftsman, and he knows about drafting because he's a designer, and he said, send him right over. So with that, I was given my separation allowance in the morning. That afternoon, I had my interview at Cadillac Engineering and was hired as a draftsman for Cadillac Engineering. Now, my experience at General Motors as a beginning designer laid the groundwork for my whole career. And by that I mean that I learned the techniques, how to design a car from the sketch phase to the full-size phase to the modeling phase. And the groundwork was absolutely excellent. And even the groundwork in the school, the 1 year prior to joining the design department, was excellent, because in the school we were grounded in the handling of the car design as a total. And both inside and out, and both the trucks and the cars, and in my case, as a special case in school, they gave me an opportunity to do a lot of industrial design work as well as car work. And I was one of the few, and probably the only one, in the school that was given this chance. But in the design structured organization of General Motors, the studios were laid out so that each studio was comprised of about 3 to 4 designers and about a half a dozen modelers. And the blackboard man, who was responsible for the drafting of the full-size car in the studio, and of course the chief of the studio, which was Bill Mitchell
at Cadillac.
And that was the general makeup of the studio. But we were not permitted to start clay work in the studio until a sketch phase had been completed. And from the sketch phase, we had made full-size renderings of our intended models. And then from this full-size rendering, then it went into the full-size drawing of the model to support the model being developed in clay. So it was an organized, structured design approach to the car design problem. The whole General Motors organization, all of the studios, followed the same pattern. And when a body design was created, and the body design was to be used by the large cars, such as the Buick Oldsmobile Cadillac, and the other body design to be used and shared with Chevrolet Pontiac studios, these proposals would be wheeled into the showroom at General Motors and discussed with the designers.
What form would they take then?
And they were full-size renderings. And from these full-size renderings, a direction would be derived. And then these bodies then would be developed in their specific body studios. Now, when the bodies would be developed in these studios, these were not the production studios, then those bodies, after they were approved by management at General Motors, and including the various divisions that would approve of the bodies, they were then given to the studios to develop as the Cadillac, Buick, or Olds, or Chevrolet, or Pontiac car lines, each contributing its quarter panels, hoods, and sharing the greenhouse on the door panels, and developing its unique character that way. So we received our bodies in the Cadillac studio, and we added our own hoods and fenders and decks and quarter panels and grills and appointments to the exterior.
Had this structure been developed by Harley Earl?
This had been a Harley Earl development, and it was the development that permeated then throughout the industry, both at Ford Motor and Chrysler and American Motors eventually.
Mr. Earl had come in the late 20s and had really set up, which was probably, check me if I'm correct, one of the very first, if not the first, styling design studios in the industry.
It was the first styling design studio in the whole industry. And he was hired by Sloan, and came from a automotive family. His father, I believe, was a Buick dealer or something.
I believe he also worked with Murphy.
And worked with Murphy on the West Coast, mm-hmm. and did special body work here. And Sloan hired him at General Motors to give his flair to the GM car lines, and of course the star that he was hired to develop was of course the LaSalle.
Yes.
And the LaSalle was one of the hallmarks of the design industry.
Is it still
at the
so
time
regarded?
And it is still one of the hallmarks of its time. And I remember the LaSalle when I was in art school.
Mm-hmm.
I was so much impressed with the LaSalle. And although I was in art school at the time doing industrial design, my main outlook at the time was to join an industrial design firm. And I sub-majored, of course, in automotive, not really knowing that that was really going to be my major.
Mm-hmm. The organization of which Mr. Earl filled up dovetailed with the existing Fisher Brothers
yes.
body of,
it dovetailed with the Fisher Works and the Body Works and the Cadillac Fleetwood
mm-hmm.
Was designed, of course, at the Fisher
mm-hmm.
and the final detailing, of course, was done at the Cadillac studio at GM,
and
the
this,
studio
and this,
I was in.
Yes, and this this structure of the body engineers coming up with the package,
yes,
say, and then the designers, the stylist, then designers,
working around that package.
Right. Yes.
Now this structure held, and was also passed on to the other car companies, and they picked up all of the original General Motors techniques, which proved so successful. Because that technique finally took over the whole industry, and General Motors benefited because those bodies then were given to the various car lines, and General Motors became so competitive in the industry that it soon was number one and stayed number one ever since.
That's very good. So at this point, the industry is being rapidly converted to war production.
The industry was rapidly converted to war production, and as I mentioned, I was let go in the morning and I was hired in the afternoon. But I have to say that what happened to me was another hallmark, which was shortly after I started working for Cadillac Engineering, just a few days, in fact. The industrial relations man from General Motors, a Cadillac industrial relations man, came up to see me and said, "Joe, I'm sorry to tell you, but I'm pleased to tell you that you were never, ever let go from General Motors. Never. And that separation allowance that you got this past week, we're going to take back from your salary on a very minimal basis. You will never, ever feel it or know it."
And your employment record did not show.
My employment record never showed that I was ever let go from General Motors, because I was in the General Motors family from the time I left school all the way through the war years. And of course, during the war years at Cadillac Engineering, I rapidly progressed from a draftsman on a board to a senior draftsman that same year, and within a year I was doing minor layout work. And by the end of my time at Cadillac Engineering, Cadillac Engineering, just before my time was to return back to the design office at General Motors, I was asked by Cadillac Engineering to go upstairs and work on a first post-war Cadillac and to help with the detailing of the first post-war Cadillac that was just being put together.
Was that Bill Mitchell doing that?
And Bill Mitchell, of course, had been involved with this Cadillac and other cars, but Bill Mitchell was also involved with the service, and he had been, I believe, in the service area with the design illustration end of the business in service. But before going back, Cadillac Engineering said, "Before going upstairs to work on this Cadillac, we want you to give serious consideration in staying with Cadillac Engineering and become one of our engineers." At that time, I was a senior layout man at Cadillac Engineering, and I had worked all my 4 years in engineering, in which I was very grateful for, because it was more rounding out my career as an automotive designer and a product designer, and being able to convert my designs into drawings that could be handled by the engineers and the modelers to develop into the full-size products. But I said no to Cadillac engineers Jim Becker at the time, who was in charge of the drafting area, and Andy Moss was also his assistant. I said no, I had trained as a designer and I was so anxious to get back to design that there was no question in my mind that I wanted to go back into the design business.
But does it anything stick in your mind of these war years with the engineering department at GM, what type of war products you worked on? Material.
Yes, of course, during the war years, I only worked on tanks and engineering problems related to the tanks from Cadillac Engineering. But I also moonlighted during the end of my war years. I moonlighted for the designers.
Sundberg and Farrar.
Sundberg and Farrar. I did design work for Sundberg and Farrar.
And in Detroit.
And I was considering joining Sundberg and Farrar. And I was considering having an interview with George W. Walker. And I was also considering, of course, going back to General Motors. But finally, I decided that I would leave General Motors and join an industrial design firm. I had in my mind a schedule. Join an industrial design firm for 2 years. I figured that I had already worked in the automotive end in the design in the Cadillac studio with Bill Mitchell sometime, and I had spent 4 years in engineering at Cadillac Engineering. I had done some moonlighting with Sundberg and Farrar, and I thought, well, I will join a design firm for 2 years and then open up my own industrial design office. And that was what I wanted to do. So I gave General Motors Engineering